This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Welcome to the Salt Lake City Real Estate Investing and Real Estate Financial Planning Podcast. Learn all about investing in real estate in Salt Lake City, Utah, with a combination of real estate financial planning and modeling with numbers specific to Salt Lake City, plus syndicated, more generalized recordings of live and pre-recorded real estate investing classes, not all of them specific to Salt Lake City. Be sure to stay tuned after the podcast for a message from our sponsors.
Well, good morning and welcome, everyone. I am your host, James Orr, and this is another module in the Real Estate Investing Secrets course. Today, we're going over one of the better ways, I would say. I don't know if it's the best way, but it is one of the better ways of improving cash flow on rental properties. It is called The Secrets of Buying Down Mortgage Interest Rate. And I've been hinting at this as we've covered previous chapters. I talked about it in the financing chapter, I believe. I think I've talked about it when we talked about how to improve cash flow. And so we're finally getting to the module where we talk about how to actually buy down the mortgage interest rate. So what is buying down mortgage interest rates? We're going to primarily be discussing buying down mortgage interest rates when buying a property in this class. You know, some people, by the way, including me, some people might also do this using an internal rate of return calculation, the IRR calculation. But we're going to use a different spreadsheet, which I'll provide you a link for in the show notes as well. And that spreadsheet is going to calculate it as a simple, kind of a simple return, simple annual return, and then a compounding annual return. And we're going to take into account a few of the different benefits you get by buying down the mortgage interest rate. But if I were going to build this spreadsheet, because I didn't build this spreadsheet, but if I was going to build this spreadsheet again, I probably would include an internal rate of return calculation and do it that way. The buying down the interest rate can be a really good strategy to improve cash flow. And as you might see, it might be better than taking the same amount of money and just putting more down to buy the property. Because if you think about it, there's really like two options when you've got extra money left over here. And I'm going to cover this in detail here in another slide. But the idea is that you've got extra money after you've come up with everything you need in order to buy the property. You could either go and put more down and improve the cash flow on the property by borrowing less and maybe improving the interest rate. Or you could go ahead and buy down your mortgage interest rate, pay a little bit of money to the lender, and actually improve the mortgage interest rate you're getting, which will improve the monthly payment you have, you know, lower the monthly payment, and therefore it'll improve cash flow. So depending on like which way you do it, it could be better for one or the other. And I'll show you the actual math and you'll be able to see exactly how much better it is using the spreadsheet. So also when you're buying down the mortgage interest rate, depending on which strategy for achieving financial independence with real estate that you opt to use, this could improve on that strategy. It could make it so that you will achieve financial independence faster. You choose to buy down the interest rate, depending on which way you're going. If your goal is to actually acquire rental properties and ultimately live off of the positive cash flow from those rental properties, even while you still have mortgages on them, then actually buying down your mortgage interest rate in a lot of cases will improve. It'll speed up. It'll make it less risky. It'll speed up the time it takes you in order to be financially dependent if you use the money that you have extra in order to buy down the interest rate to improve cash flow on it, because it'll improve the amount of cash flow you have, which will help you get to that financial independence faster. However, what if your goal is to actually be financially independent by, you know, buying 10 rental properties with the intention of holding those for a very short period of time until you get enough, you know, massive growth that you're seeing from, you know, having highly leveraged properties where they're appreciating, you're paying down the loan on them, maybe you're getting a little bit of cash flow, you're getting some tax benefits on those, but you hold those for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And then once you've had the massive amount of return on equity that you've seen, we'll cover this in a future module in detail, but you'll see the return on equity drops off over time. You'll be able to get these rocket booster returns on those properties for the first few years that you hold them. Then at the end of that time, maybe you decide to go ahead and liquidate those properties, take the proceeds and invest in stocks or bonds or whatever, or take the proceeds and actually pay off one or two or three or four properties that you've decided to hold on to. So now you have completely free and clear properties, or maybe you sell off all 10 and use the proceeds to then go buy a much larger apartment building, sort of like the Monopoly strategy of, you know, 4 greenhouses to 1 red hotel. You actually buy 10 properties, use those to grow really rapidly while you're in that really high return on equity, the kind of rocket booster part of the return that I discussed, and then take those properties, sell them off, and then go buy, you know, one big apartment building or two big apartment buildings and re-leverage up and kind of return your strategy, improve your returns by doing that. So that is a version of this. So depending on which one of those strategies you do, if you're buying properties that you intend to hold forever and keep the loans on them, then buying down interest rates could be a really great way to improve the speed on that. However, if you're doing these other more advanced strategies or other more active strategies, they not maybe more advanced, but more active strategies where you're buying properties and then ultimately selling them or using proceeds or paying them off early, then you may not want to buy down mortgage interest rates because you might not be able to get a long enough period of time to be able to see the improved returns where you can get your money back and then also see a really good return on the money that you invested. So for those reasons, may help you or it may not. And we're going to go into some detail on that as we continue on here. So specifically, we're talking about the process of buying properties. And we're talking about buying down the mortgage interest rate when we're buying properties. We're not going to be discussing in this particular class buying down mortgage interest rate during cash out refinances, because there are some times when you may want to consider buying down the mortgage interest rate when you're doing a cash out refi on a property, or putting money into a deal and doing a cash in refi, where you know you have some extra money now that you didn't have when you bought the property, or there's an incentive for you to actually put more down because you get a break on the interest rate, where you decide you want to do a refi on the property and you decide to put money in when you do your refi in order to get a better rate. But we're not discussing that in this particular module. And also rate and term refinances, where you're just refinancing the property in order to change your mortgage interest rate, presumably actually lower the mortgage interest rate, and also change the term on the loan. So maybe you had a 30-year loan and you paid down over 7 years. Now you got 23 left. When you do a refinance, even if you keep the same rate, you can extend the term back out to 30 years and lower your overall payment. It's one of the strategies for improving cash flow we talked about, but I'm not going to be discussing that here, because when you do that, you could choose to pay some money and buy down your mortgage interest rate to get a lower interest rate when you do that. And I'm not going to be talking about recasting a loan. Recasting a loan is when you have a lump sum of money, you go to the lender and you say, look, if I just gave you this $10,000, all it would do is it would reduce the balance I owe. My monthly payment would not change. However, if I ask you to recast the loan, and some lenders will do this, some lenders will require a small fee to do it. Some lenders won't do it at all. But in some lenders, you can go to them and say, I'll give you this $10,000. But what I want you to do is I want you to reduce my monthly payment. I want you to keep the loan term the same, but I want to have a $50 or so less monthly payment for this extra $10,000 payment. And that is a way to improve cash flow. Normally, when we go and we actually pay early on a loan, all we do is we move in the date at which the loan will ultimately be paid off. We don't actually change the monthly payment. When you recast a loan, it keeps the date the same, but it actually reduces the amount you're paying monthly by the amount that you put down. So basically, that's recasting. And so we're not going to be discussing that in this module. It's a long description to tell you that we're not doing that. So those are the things we're not doing. We're primarily focused in on buying a property and then buying down the mortgage date when we're buying the property. Although similar math and considerations do apply whether you're doing these cash out refinances or cash in refinances or the rate and term refinances or recasting of the loan. All those things that we talked about there, the kind of thinking and the math behind what we're doing is all going to be the same or very similar, I should say, for those types of strategies as well. So anything you learn here, you can apply when you do that. But the focus of the class, rather than getting off on all sorts of tangents, in addition to the tangents I'm already going to go on, we're not going to be covering those things. All right, so big picture. Interest rates on loans can be changed by how much you pay or how much you receive as a credit when you get the loan. You could go to a lender and ask them, hey, look, I want to get a loan from you. If I got a loan, I didn't pay you any money, no points, which I'm going to discuss what points are here in a second. But if I didn't pay you any points on the loan, what would my mortgage interest rate would be right now? And they say to you, you know, it's 7%. And you say, okay, if I decide to voluntarily take a slightly higher interest rate from you, you know, 7.125 or 7.25 or whatever it is, what would you pay me in order to voluntarily take a slightly higher interest rate? And they say, oh, we will pay you whatever it is, $3,000 if you decide to take, you know, 7.125 instead of 7%. So 7% is if you don't pay us any money. If you decide to voluntarily take a higher mortgage interest rate, we'll actually pay you some money that you can then use in order to help cover some of your closing costs. It is a way that if you wanted to go in and get a loan and you didn't have a lot of extra money, know, like you're really tight on buying your first property and you wanted to only put, you know, 3.5% down or 5% down, and you're like, I don't have a lot of extra money for closing costs, you could voluntarily take a higher mortgage interest rate, have the lender give you a credit, which would then cover your closing costs in order to get that loan. So it works in one direction where if you take a higher interest rate, they will actually give you money as a credit that you can then use for closing costs. But it works the other way too. The lender says to you, hey, look, and if you want to, you can pay us some money and we'll give you a better interest rate. So instead of you paying us nothing and getting 7%, if you decide to pay us, whatever it is, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, we will allow you to get 6.875 as an interest rate instead of 7%, or 6.75. And you say, well, what if I wanted to buy it all the way down to 6.5 and buy it down by a whole half point? Oh, well, we can calculate out how much that will be and give you a number to tell you how much you need to pay us in order to get a 6.5% mortgage instead of a 7%. So you can either voluntarily take a higher interest rate and get a credit to help cover closing costs, or you can pay the lender money and get a lower interest rate. That's the big picture of what we're talking about here. And we're going to be focusing more in on the side of you paying the lender money in order to get a better interest rate. Now, the change in the interest rate, for the sake of these discussions, like this particular module and stuff, lasts for the life of the loan. You could go out and get like one of these loans where, you know, there's the seller of a property or a lot of times builders of new construction properties will offer you some type of like special financing where the interest rate is low for the first year, and then it goes up a little bit after the second year. And then after the third year, the rate becomes fixed for the rest of the 28 years that are remaining on the loan. It's like a 2-1 buy down, where for 2 years, you have a slightly lower interest rate and it tiers down. So the first year, it's actually the lowest. The next year, it kind of bumps up a little bit and your monthly payment bumps up a little bit. And then the third year, it actually is the same rate for the rest of the time. So there are versions of the loan that are like that. That's not what we're talking about here. We're going to be talking about when you pay a fee and you actually get the lower interest rate for the full 30-year term of the loan, or the full 15-year term of the loan, depending on, you know, what duration of loan you're getting. So it's the full length of the loan until you pay off the loan. So you could basically have the life of the loan be until you pay it off organically, if you were just making your regular monthly payments consistently on the first of the month, every single month, you know, without making extra payments or something like that, the loan would last the full amortization period, which in most cases is going to be a 30-year loan. So you pay off the loan, it happens there. Or if you make extra payments, it's going to shorten the time of the loan. So that lower interest rate will only last until you pay off the loan. So you make extra payments and you shorten your loan by, you know, 3 years or something like that, it's only going to last 27 and a half years. Or it only lasts until you sell the property, because when you sell the property, most of the time you are paying off the loan. So that at that point in time, the loan would be paid off and you wouldn't have the benefit anymore. Or if you go out and you refinance the property, if you decide to do like a cash out refi or a rate and term refi or a cash in refi, or you do anything like that, then you are actually going to have the benefit of buying down this mortgage interest rate go away when you refinance the mortgage. You'd have to rebuy down the interest rate in order to get it again on the next loan, if you think about it that way. Okay. Now, there are other things you can do where you can get short-term interest rate improvements. For example, lower payments in that first year or two. And that's that example I used where we talked about like the 2-1 buy-in. But again, I'm not talking about in this class. So you just kind of ignore that for now. But those do exist and you will see them. And it's not to be confused with what we're talking about here. That's usually an incentive to get you to buy the property from like a builder or a seller. It'll help someone who is struggling with the monthly payment a lot of times, or they want to see improved cash flow while they're waiting for rents to kind of slowly creep up. Or maybe you're buying a property and you're going to have abnormally low rents for the first year, which is pretty common, right? When you buy a property for the first time, you don't have those 90 days in advance a lot of times in order to find your tenant. So a lot of times we're taking a slightly lower rent on a property the first time we buy a property, when we first buy a property and we put that first tenant in there, right? Because we don't have all this ample time in order to do marketing and to kind of test the high part and bring our kind of like rents down as we go. You know, once we buy the property, because a lot of times you can't market before you own the property because it's owner occupied or something like that. But once you buy the property, then you've got a vacant property and you're trying to fill it as quickly as possible. You may not choose to optimize to get that last $50 or $100 a month in rent on a property. You may just get someone in there right away so that you minimize vacancy. You're kind of like doing the calculation of, do I want vacancy or do I want to like maximize my rent? And a lot of times minimizing the vacancy will help you optimally get that there. And so for like a 2-1 buy down, that may actually benefit you in the short term, because you get a lower monthly payment that first year and that second year, And then by the third year, you have the time to kind of get your rent cycles on order. You're kind of like not buying the property and renting it at a inopportune time. So you'll get back on, you know, ideal season, like marketing season, in order to get the maximum rent. And also you'll be able to start 60 to 90 days in advance of the previous tenant moving out in order to get that higher rent. So they can be advantageous to do those two ones, but we're not really talking about those in terms of buying down the mortgage interest rate. Okay, so I mentioned the idea of point. What is a point? So a point is money paid to a lender, usually upfront, always upfront, to get the mortgage interest rate. So it's money that you pay in order to capture that particular mortgage interest rate. It is non-refundable. Once you pay this fee to the lender, you don't get that fee back. It's like a sunk cost into the deal that you no longer get back. Unlike when you actually put more down on the property, that actually gets kind of trapped in the property as equity. And when you go to sell the property, you're usually getting that money back. So one of the big things that I think a lot of people at first, when they hear about the idea of buying down your mortgage interest rate, is you're like, that's just wasted money. I spent that money. I don't get it back. Versus when you actually put more down as a down payment, you can get that money back. You know, you put an extra $5,000 as a down payment in your property. When you sell it, you're likely to capture that $5,000 back in equity. Okay. But when you do points, you don't get it back. It's non-refundable. It's a sunk cost. So when we do our calculation, you take into account that that money is gone. Do you need to actually repay yourself that money? And then any money after you get repaid the money then counts as a return you've earned on the money. Okay. So when we do the calculations, we do that correctly in the spreadsheet. So from the lender's perspective, when you pay points, they're receiving money down, money now at the time of your closing instead of interest later. So by paying them $5,000 in advance, it's almost like interest in advance. It's not technically interest in advance, but it's money they receive now in lieu of getting extra interest over whatever time period you decide to keep that loan, whether it's 30 years or 5 years before you sell it or refi it or whatever. They're basically making a bet saying, hey, look, I'll take $5,000 from you now in exchange for not getting an extra whatever it is per month that you save on this thing for whatever period of time that you own that loan, that you have that loan on place on the property. 1 point is equal to 1% of the loan amount. So for example, if we're talking like a $500,000 property, if you were putting 20% down on that, so you put $100,000 down buying a $500,000 property, you'd have a $400,000 loan if you put 20% down, then 1 point would be 1% of the loan amount, not 1% of the purchase price, but 1% of the loan amount, which is $400,000 or $4,000. So 1 point would be $4,000 in that case. Again, this is not part of your down payment. The points are not part of your down payment. They are in addition to your down payment, and it is not part of your monthly payments. That is totally different as well, although it does impact your monthly payment. And if you think about, you're like, oh, James, you know, you told me I could actually get a credit back. You know, the interest rate was 7% if I didn't pay any money. But if I voluntarily take, you know, 7.125, you'll give me a little bit of money back. If I take 7.25, you'll give me a little bit more money back. If I take 7.375, you'll even give me even more money back. Well, can I just use that money as my down payment? And maybe I take an 8% loan, but I actually get enough credit back where it covers my entire down payment? Unfortunately, no. You cannot use the credits for down payment. You can use the credits for closing costs, like the cost to get the loan or prepaying on insurance, taxes, or things like that. But you cannot use it in order to use your down payment. So you're going to always need whatever your down payment is for the loan, whether you put points down or you receive credit back. Down payment's always going to be the same for you. You will always need that amount. It doesn't matter what the points are. So that's one of the things about loans. All right, let's talk about par rate. The par rate on a mortgage is the mortgage interest rate if you paid exactly 0 points. If you didn't get any type of money back, you didn't receive any credit to accept the higher interest rate, and you did not buy down the interest rate. So the par rate is the mortgage interest rate if you decided not to do any money into the deal in addition to whatever down payment and closing costs you have, okay? So rarely does the par rate land on a round interest rate number. It's not usually going to be 6.5.0000 or 7.0000000, okay? It's more common to see it be like 6.511 or 6.517 or 7.134 or something like that. So it's usually going to be a like not perfect round number in order to get the exact par rate. Now you'll see that be really, really close. You'll usually have like, you know, if you do 6.5, you're going to get, you know, you'll receive $47 back as a credit. Or if you decide to do, you know, 7% interest rate, it's going to cost you $112. Or, you know, you do, you know, another lender might tell you, you know, if you 6.75, you'll get a credit of $211. Those are the ones that we kind of consider to be close enough. It's not like you're paying $4,000. It's like a little bit off of where it is. And so you can tell approximately where the par rate is going to be by how much of a credit or how much of a little bit of a discount you have to pay in order to get that. So you'll usually end up paying a little bit to buy down the interest rate or receive a small amount in a credit to have it be on a round interest rate, which is where lenders like to be. They're going to usually want to give you a loan at, you know, one of the eighths. So like 6.125, 6.25, 6.375, 6.5, 6.625, 6.75 or 6.875 or 7. Like they're going to want to be on the eighths. So you'll know what the eighths are there. So a lot of times they're not going to do that. With commercial properties, by the way, a lot of times they don't do the eighths. They'll actually do them as to like more precise numbers. Okay, so when asking a lender, what's the rate? Be super careful to clarify what rate they're giving to you. You know, we talked about this when we talked about calling and comparing different lenders, is that you need to be very specific and understand what it is that they're giving you. Some lenders are going to quote you with paying a point. They're going to be like, hey, listen, I always give the rate that I'm going to give to you, knowing that I'm going to charge you 1 point in order to get the loan. Where other lenders are like telling you, hey, I'm going to give you the rate that I can give you with no point. Or I'm going to give it to you where you're not having to pay any closing costs and I'm going to roll all that into the loan. So I'm going to give you one that's a little bit higher where I give you a credit to cover all your closing costs. You need to understand what rate the lender is giving you and make sure that if you are comparing different lenders, that you are getting the same apples to apples comparison as close as you can. And instead of actually getting one where it gives you a one with a point, the other one gives you one where it's like, you know, small credit, or one gives you an actual par rate. You want to understand what you're getting and understand the differences between those so that you can make sure you compare different guys and understand what it is. Ideally, you want to get the full pay down sheet that shows you how much it costs you to buy down different ones. I'm going to show you that here. May even be the next slide. It's not the next slide. All right, so extra money when buying. So here's the kind of concept of this class. Here's the framework that we're going to use to discuss this. So you're buying a property. You have enough money for your down payment. You know, let's say it's 5% down or whatever it is. You have enough money for reserves on the property because it would be imprudent for you. It would be silly for you to go buy a rental property and not have reserves on that property to cover the inevitable things that you know are going to come up. Unexpected vacancies, unexpected repairs. You know, just like a maintenance issue or a delay in getting paid or some other issue that's going to come up property. You know you need reserves, so you should have reserves. Do you have enough for the down payment? You have enough for reserves. You have enough for all the different closing costs that it takes in order to get into a property. You know, you have enough for all the rent-ready costs, all the repairs that you need to do after you buy a property that you need to do in order to get the property ready to rent, get a tenant in there, and all that other stuff. And if your property happens to have some negative cash flow, you've set aside all of the money that you need for covering the negative cash flow until, you know, rents kind of creep up and you're likely to not have negative cash flow anymore. You're just going to set that money aside because you know that it's prudent to do so. We covered this in the deal analysis class where we talked about why it's important for you to maybe set aside the money that for any negative cash you're going to have in a property, which is really deferred down payment, right? If you had put more down, you wouldn't have this negative cash flow. And so you're going to set aside any money that you might need for negative cash flow because you decided to put less down on the property, okay? So you have enough money for down payment, reserves, closing costs, all those rent-ready costs, and any negative cash flow that you might have or deferred down payment is what I like to call it. So you have all that money there. Plus, in addition to having all the money that you need in order to buy the property, you do happen to have extra money. You're like, hey, listen, you know, I had saved up whatever it is, $200,000, and everything, including down payment, reserves, closing costs, and negative cash flow is only gonna cost me $100,000. And so I've got this extra money sitting on the sideline. What should I do with this extra money? I mean, you can keep it wherever it's invested right now, you know, keep it in a savings account or in a stock market account or in bonds or whatever you've got the money kind of growing in to kind of keep it there. That's definitely something you can do. You can, you know, basically invest it in something else, right? That idea of like keep it in stocks or bonds or crypto, which I don't probably recommend, but you can do whatever you want. You know, you could do it into other things you do. You can also save it up for buying another rental property. You say, look, now I'm like part of the way there in order to buy my next rental property to do it. So you could also say, look, you know, I've got this extra money. Why don't I go ahead and use some of this money to do marketing to find off-market deals? I could do, you know, real estate entrepreneurship. I could do creative financing sort of stuff and spend some marketing in order to find some motivated sellers and actually talk to them and structure some win-win transactions where I'm able to buy properties that way. And maybe I don't need these large down payments to do that, but I need a little bit of money in order to do the marketing in order to get the deal. Or maybe I'm going to do wholesaling or whatever it is you're going to do. You can take this money, you can use it to find off-market deals. you can make improvements to the property that you are buying in order to improve cash flow, or use it to make improvements to properties you already own. Then, look, if I close in the garage, I'm going to get extra money here. Or if I, convert this one thing that really feels like a duplex, although it's technically not a duplex, into two separate units and then rent it by roommates, I'm actually going to be able to improve my cash flow. So I could take some money that I've got extra and I could use that to improve cash flow. Or maybe you decide to like hire a property manager in order to buy back some of your own time. So you know that it's going to be about break-even cash flow. I'm going to take this extra money I have and I'm going to use it to pay for a property manager so that I could take my time, focus more in on work, save up more of a down payment, or focus more in on a side hustle where I'm going to start a business or I'm going to sell the business or whatever you're going to do in order to be able to improve whatever your overall economics are doing that. So you could really, the big picture is you could invest in something else if you have this extra money. Or number two, you can de-risk. You could decide to say, okay, I'm at a point in my life, I've got assets, I don't want to lose what I have, I don't want to take a step backward. So I would like to actually become less risky moving forward in my strategy. So one way to de-risk is to actually increase your reserves. If you only had, a month or two of reserves before, maybe you decide now I need 3 months of reserves. Or maybe if you had 3 months before, you say, look, now I want to have 6 months of reserves for all of my rental properties, not just one, but I want to have 6 reserves for all my properties. Or maybe you decide, look, I want to be really conservative. I want to have 12 months of reserves for all my rental properties. Or, I want to have 2 years of reserves so that I know I can handle basically anything that the world's going to throw at me. We have another, COVID crisis or whatever. I'm completely ready. I feel totally at peace. I feel very comfortable knowing that I'm doing that. So I'm going to de-risk by deciding to increase my reserves. I'm going to increase the amount I have in reserves. I'm just going to keep that on the sideline in some type of really safe savings account or, some type of savings account in combination with stock market account or whatever you're going to do. So that's one way to de-risk. Another way to de-risk is you could buy more insurance. So if you only had, your umbrella policy up to $1 million, and now you've heard the asset protection class, you're like, the umbrella policy should cover me, not for the amount of equity I have in my property, but for what the most possible highest lawsuit I don't want to have to pay on would be. So let's say you think to yourself, well, there's a chance someone could sue me for, $3 million or $4 million or something like that. So I want to have an umbrella policy that covers me up to $4 billion. And so you decide to take some of your extra money. And one of the ways you de-risk is you would buy more insurance. Or you could buy better insurance. You could change all the policies on your rental policies to cover the extra things we talked about in the insurance module. Things like sewer backup, or you want to get insurance in case there's someone growing meth on your property, or you want to add in the insurance that covers you if you have a special assessment for all your condos and townhomes. Or you can get more insurance and or better insurance in order to de-risk, or do a combination of increasing reserves and also buying more or better insurance to make sure that you're protected in case something happens that goes against you, something adverse happens to you while you have these rental properties. So that's the second thing you could possibly do with the extra money. The third thing you could do is you could decide, hey, look, I was going to buy this property. I was going to put whatever it was down, 20% down. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose to put more down on this property. By putting more down when I'm buying this property, I'm borrowing less on the property. When you borrow less money on a property, it means that your monthly payment gets reduced, which means that means that you improve your cash flow. By having a lower monthly payment, your expenses on the property are lower. And so the amount of profit you make, the amount of cash flow you get in the property has improved by that amount. Okay. Maybe by a little bit less, depending on how you do your calculation, but it improves overall about the same amount. Okay. So you borrow less and that improves your cash flow. Or maybe you're like, look, I was actually going to put 5% down, buy this property as a nomad, and I was going to have private mortgage insurance, which, remember, private mortgage insurance is insurance that you pay for to protect the lender in case you default. The lender really wants you to put at least 20% down on the property. You tell them, all right, Mr. Lender, I really don't want to put 20% down. Would you consider making me a loan where I only put 10% down or 15% down or 5% down? And they say, we might be willing to do that. We're probably going to charge you a slightly higher interest rate. But in addition to that, we want you to pay this third party that will protect us in case you default, you don't make payments on the property, and now we need to come in and foreclose on you. And because we need to go take back the property and then we need to sell it, we have some costs of sale and some holding costs while we do that, we might lose money. We're not going to get all of our money back because you only put up 5% and it might cost us 12% of the property value in between holding costs and the foreclosure process and, paying real estate commissions to find a buyer and a seller, and pay our real estate agent who's representing us to sell the property. So we may only get, 12% back. And so this third party insurance company will actually make up the difference so that we don't lose money. That's what private mortgage insurance is. And so by putting more down, you could actually completely eliminate private mortgage insurance. Let's say you were going to put 15% down and buy a non-owner occupant property. Now you say, well, I got this extra money. Why don't I put 5% more down? And now I don't have PMI anymore. So both you've actually decreased the amount you're borrowing because you went from 15% down now to 20% down. And so the amount you're borrowing is lower, so your cash will improve. Plus you went from 15% down, which had PMI, and maybe PMI was $250 a month. Now you put an extra 5% down. So you got rid of that PMI, you improved your cash flow by an extra $250 a month because you no longer have PMI. So that's an advantage of putting more down, right? So you borrow less and maybe you get rid of PMI. And by the way, the PMI doesn't have to be, you go from like 15% all the way to 20%. If you were gonna have to pay PMI and you're only putting 5% down, if you increase your down payment to 10%, you may cross over a kind of threshold in the PMI calculation where they say, hey, it's for anything, you know, 95% loan to value or less, it's this PMI amount. Anything 90% loan to value or less, basically you put 10% down, it's going to be a different PMI amount. And so your PMI actually may not go to zero. It just may go from, you know, whatever it is, $300 a month to $225 a month. And so you might see a $75 a month improvement in your PMI payment just by going into the next tier of PMI. So it doesn't have to be going all the way down to 20% down in order to get rid of it completely. You could just be improving it by going over a threshold. And you could talk to your lender about like what those thresholds are, and you could decide to kind of do the calculation just like we're going to do here with buying down your mortgage interest rate to find out how much you'd save by doing that. Okay? So by putting more down, you can borrow less, you can get rid of PMI possibly if you have PMI, looking at that. Or maybe you get a slightly better interest rate by putting more down, because lenders do reward you with better interest rates if you put more down. For example, you were going to go buy a rental property with 20% down. They might quote you whatever it is, 7% mortgage interest rate. However, if they say to you, if you put 25% down, not only are you going to be borrowing less, your cash will improve because you're borrowing, you know, from 20% to now you're only borrowing 75% loan to value. So you're going to borrow less money. But in addition to that, we are also going to give you an improvement in your interest rate because you crossed over into a new loan to value tier. So instead of actually having the 80% loan to value tier, you're now at the 75% loan to value tier. And so they improve your interest rate. Maybe it's 6.875 or 6.75 from going to 20% to 25% down. They feel like you're putting more into the deal, that it's less risky for them. And so they're willing to reward you with a better interest rate for doing that. So there are certain tiers where those interest rates will improve. When you talk to your lender, ask them, say, look, if I put 20% down, what's my interest rate going to be? If I put 25% down, what's it going to be? If I put 30% down, what's it going to be? If I put 35% down? And you can see how these interest rates drop. So not only will you be saving money because you're borrowing less, if you happen to be having PMI and you're getting close to that, you could remove PMI, but also you might also get a slightly better interest rate by moving into a better kind of like tier for the loan that you're getting itself. So putting more down is a real option for you if you've got extra money sitting on the sideline and you're about to buy a deal. But the last option is, you could choose to buy down the mortgage interest rate. So you could invest in something else, you could de-risk, you could put more down, or you could buy down the mortgage interest rate. And that's primarily what we're discussing in today's module. Comparing options. If you were to put more down, you would borrow less, you'd have a lower payment, which would improve cash flow. If you were to buy down the mortgage interest rate, you're borrowing the same amount, you're reducing your interest rate because that's literally what you're buying down. You're buying down the mortgage interest rate and you would have improved cash flow. If you put more down in down payment, the money is now equity in the property and you're likely to get it back when you sell or cash out refi on the property. If you buy down your mortgage interest rate, the money is consumed. The amount of money you put into the deal is consumed. That buy down amount is consumed by the property. It is not equity in the property. And you do not get it back when you sell or cash out refi. You need to get paid back by the improved cash flow you're getting on it. And then once you've received enough extra cash flow from buying down the mortgage interest rate where it's paid you back, then anything in addition to the amount after you've been paid back is considered a return that you've earned on that amount of money that you got back. Okay. So that's how we're going to do the calculation. If you put more down on the down payment, it lasts the full life of the loan. Go from, you know, putting 20% down and 25% down, that's going to be in effect for the full duration of the loan. When you're buying down the interest rate, it also lasts for the full life of the loan. And whatever the term of the loan is until you cash out refi or you sell the property or you pay off the loan. When you put more up in down payment, it may change your interest rate. If you go from that 20% to that 25% down, now that actually gets an improved interest rate. when you buy down your interest rate, that's literally what you're doing. You're changing the interest rate. You're changing the interest rate in the loan. If you put more down in the down payment, it may impact the PMI, the private mortgage insurance payment. If you put 5% and you go to 10%, or if you put 15% going to 20%, those could actually either completely eliminate PMI once you get to 20%, or it can improve it by reducing the amount you need to pay as you move into a different tier with PMI. When you buy down the mortgage interest rate, it does not impact PMI at all. So if you had PMI, it's going to be the same. Doesn't impact it at all. So those are sort of like comparing the two options and what the differences are. Now, this is an example of an email I would get from a lender if I asked them to give me a list of all the different buy-down rates on a loan that I got. And so they would tell you, these are rates for today. They give you a date on it. They tell you what the purchase price is because they need to know the purchase price in order to tell you the amounts that these points are going to be. How much you're putting down, so 5% down in this particular case, a single family residence, 720 credit score, conventional loan. And right now they're sitting at about 6.5%. And if you look at the table, you'll see that at the 6.5% number, that I'm actually having to pay about $960 in order to get 6.5%. But that's considered pretty much par-ish, right? Because if I took 6.625, I'd get a $271 credit. So the par rate, the rate where I'd actually pay zero, is somewhere between 6.5 and 6.625. It's where it crosses over from me receiving a credit to me paying them a little bit of money, okay? And we're going to go into a lot of detail with what all these are, but I'll just go briefly over like what it is so you understand what it's showing me. It's showing you what interest rate you get. It's showing me what the APR is, which APR is a calculation lenders do to try to have you be able to compare loan to loan or lender to lender. It includes the interest rate you're paying on the mortgage and all of the costs that it costs you in order to get the loan. It's helpful calculation in some ways, but it's not a great calculation in my opinion, okay? Then it tells you the price, which you can basically ignore. It tells you the discount or rebate. So like what percentage, you had to pay or got a credit for. And then it actually converts that to dollars amount. So it shows you, 271 credit is what you get in order to get 6.625, or you'd have to pay $960 to get 6.5, or you'd have to pay $1,748 in order to get 6.49. And so it shows you how much you'd have to pay in order to get all those. And then it shows you what the lender fees were added on to that. And then it would tell you what your principal and interest payment would. What would be your monthly payment if you did this? And so this is a table that the lender would often send over to you to show you what the buy-downs are. Now, it's really hard to look at this and say, should I buy down my mortgage interest rate or not, right? Because you're like, okay, I see that I could buy it down, but like, how do I know if that's a good deal or not? How do I figure out if that's a good calculation? So we plug numbers into the spreadsheet, and we're going to use Brian Williams buy-down calculator version 3.01. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for those that have purchased this particular course. And so you'll get access to that, and you'll be able to do it. And on that, you will enter in the loan amount that you're getting, the purchase price of the property, the loan length, 30 for 30 years, for example, the par rate, or use the par rate calculator in order to calculate what the exact number is, not just that it's, approximately this number. We want to know what the exact number is so that they can actually do a full-on calculation. And then copy the interest rates and the costs from that lender email into the spreadsheet. So for example, it would look something like this. This is what the what Brian's spreadsheet looks like. And so you enter in the loan amount on here, the purchase price of the property, the loan length, and then the par rate. And if you don't know the par rate, there's a spot for calculating the par rate below this section on the spreadsheet itself. And then we'll show you what the par payment would be. And then you're going to put in the interest rate and then what the costs are for buying down different things here. Negative numbers here, like this 2366, that means you're getting a credit. Okay, so that's the negative numbers there. And then the positive numbers show you that it's costing you this amount for doing that. And then Brian's spreadsheet's going to do all these other calculations and a whole bunch of other ones for you and show you what it is here. So the cost difference, it'll tell you how much it changed from going from this particular loan amount, the interest rate, to this particular interest rate. And then it'll tell you what the next one is. And it'll tell you what it costs to move up one tier. To move up, or a better way to say this, to reduce your mortgage interest rate by one increment, whatever it is there. Okay. So it shows you the cost difference. The difference in cost right here is the calculation between the difference between these two. The average cost in order to go per tier that you're doing. The cost of buying down in point shows you that number. The point cost differential, the difference in points and what it costs there. The PI payments at the bought down rate. So this calculates what your new payment's going to be. The payment difference, it tells you how much it improved by. So this is $30 better than the previous one. The annual difference takes this monthly number and multiplies by 12 in order to get a yearly amount. And then how long it will take back, how long it will take you in terms of years in order to pay back buying down this mortgage interest rate. So if you look at this one, it says, look, it takes 1.39 years, which is a really short one. In fact, I think it's the shortest one on there. It'll take 1.39 years. Well, that's an unfortunate one because that's a credit. Let's do one where you have to pay for it. So here's one, 2.88 years. So it takes you 2.88 years of receiving extra cash flow, the extra cash flow that you're getting by buying down the mortgage interest rate in order to get to the point where you've just paid back what you received. So if you're going to sell a property in a year or you're going to refinance a property after 3 years, it's probably not worth it. I mean, you get your money back, but you wouldn't have really gotten a return on that. So you'd want to make sure you're going to hold the property for longer than that period of time to decide you want to move forward by buying down the interest rate there. If you're going to hold it for 30 years, great. If you're going to hold it for 10 years, you can calculate what your return would be based on holding it for 10 years. But it shows you that how long it's going to take you in years in order to pay back that particular buy down to get to that point. Okay. So it does the calculation for you for payback years. So buying down, 1/8 point varies. So the amount of money that is required for you to buy down your interest rate by 1/8 of a point, you know, to improve your mortgage interest rate by 1/8, actually is not the same for each eighth. It's different. There are inefficiencies in the buy down market. There are inefficiencies in what the lender will charge you to go from, you know, 6.5 to, you know, 6.375, or from 6.375 to, you know, 6%. Like the amount that they charge you to make those jumps, even though the jumps are the same dollar, the same interest rate amount, you know, 6.125 to 6.25, to 6.25 to 6.375, the cost that they're going to charge you varies. There's inefficiency. And that's what makes this great, because we can choose to take advantage of market inefficiencies, and we can choose not to pay where it becomes really inefficient for us to do so. Okay. So now this shows you the red line signifies where it was a credit, and the red line to the right shows you where you're paying money in order to buy them down. This shows you the mortgage interest rate along the bottom, and then this shows you the cost to move from there. So in order to go to 6.5% mortgage interest rate, it's going to cost us $1,231. You know, it's from this sheet over here is what it costs you, $1,231 in order to go to that particular interest rate of 6.5. So you can see we're just putting these numbers and plotting them on a chart so you could just see the size of them and how they compare. But it's actually cheaper, costs you $788 more in order to go to this next tier of 6.49. In order to go to 6.375, it's 656, okay? So you can see that the jumps are not substantial to do that. So sometimes it's cheaper for you to go buy down more than it is for you to take a less thing there. Now let's talk about this idea of vanity rate. So sometimes lenders, in order to do their marketing, will kind of like give you a vanity rate, a rate that is not a real number. It's not like on 1/8. Like, for example, they'll say, well, I can get you 5.99. 5.99 is really close to 6, but it sounds better than 6. And so they might use that for marketing. So a lot of times lenders will throw in what they call vanity rates. Vanity rates are the ones that are kind of like they're numbered to make it look like you got a better deal. So it's not 5.5, it's 5.49. It's not 6%, it's 5.99. It's not 6.5, it's 6.49. And so I've highlighted where they showed you these vanity rates. And so what I'm going to try to do is remove those so that we're not kind of taking those into account and do that. You could keep them in there and look at what the calculations are and decide if you want to do those. But I found that most of the time, they're not worthwhile pursuing. And you may find it to be completely different, but that's what I found here. So these are the vanity rates that I've highlighted, the ones in red. And so I'm going to go ahead and just remove those so that we do the same chart, but now we're removing the vanity rates so you can see those. And so right now, it's now showing you what it costs. And all of the kind of like distances between each one of these numbers is a full 1/8 of a point, 1/8 of a percentage point. So 6.5 to 6.375, 6.375 to 6.25, 6.25 to 6.125. Every one of them is 1/8 different. Okay. And now you can see these relative sizes for those buying down the rates. Okay. So what now that we've taken that spreadsheet and we've excluded the vanity rate, which is what I recommend you do if you've got ones and they send over vanity rates, either don't enter them in to begin with or enter them in, do the calculation, then you could remove them just to be able to see what the difference is between these are, okay? The average cost per incremental increase. And so this number now shows you what it costs per 1/8 of a point improvement. And so you can see, you know, if you're only going from, is the credit here. Let's go here. So 1109 is what it costs you to buy down your rate to that first 6.5%. But it actually costs you a little bit more to go from 6.5 to 6.375 on a per eighth basis, because it's going to take you the average of what it costs to buy down per eighth. And so the next one here is going to be, goes up a little bit to get to 6.25, but then it actually goes down. It becomes cheaper for you to go to the next tier on a per eighth basis. And in order to make this easier to see, you can kind of see the relative sizes here as well, but I'm going to show you them plotted out on a larger chart so that you can actually see what's going on here. So now I'm plotting in the average cost per eighth. And you can see as it gets more expensive, you may choose you don't want to go and make it more expensive. But if you're going to go to here, you might as well get it cheaper by buying down the next eighth or this one, which is basically the same price. It's a dollar off. Or then you may not want to go and increase it after you get to here, because then it goes up. It becomes more expensive to per eighth in order to go buy down this next one. So you can see these inefficiencies to decide what to do it. And you can see that overall, the trend happens to be up and to the right, but there are some mini inefficiencies in the marketplace where you could get good deals on buying down your mortgage interest rate, okay? Now, the spreadsheet will then, if you keep scrolling to the right of the spreadsheet, it will show you what your return is on investment. And Brian calculates it in two different ways. He shows you your simple interest return, which we talked about in detail. We talked about deal analysis. The simple interest return is the total return divided by the number of years, or the compound interest return, which takes into account that you'll be able to compound your money over time, and that it's a more accurate way, in my opinion, of doing the calculation, although there are times when you probably want simple interest. But you can then go look at this and decide, you know, what is your return that you're getting? So what is the simple interest for the first 5 years of having this particular thing? If you buy down, it shows you all the different rates here. And so, you know, if you've got this rate here, it might be 11.1% return on the money that you got. So you get all your money back, and then you're earning 11.1% over that five-year period by buying down your mortgage interest rate there. Or, you know, example here, if you go for 10 years out, then you get a 21.1% return, simple interest on your money. By buying down the mortgage interest rate, you get your money back, and then you made 21% for each year for 10 years. Is that good? Well, if you can make money somewhere else, you may not think it's that good. If you make money that is in excess of 21%, then it might not be good. But this is 21% return, and it's not guaranteed in that, like, you're definitely getting it, but it's guaranteed in the sense that it doesn't matter what the market does. It's not dependent on appreciation. It's not dependent upon the stock market doing something. It's like you're lowering what you have to pay as an expense on your property. So regardless of, you know, as long as you're making that amount of cash flow on the property, you are going to get that as a discount, a savings on not having to pay that as an expense, which improves your cash flow. So in that way, it's sort of guaranteed, but not like guaranteed, right? There's no third party guaranteeing it. So you're doing that, and it's actually a cash flow return. So it's sort of like an improving your cash on cash return, where not all the returns you'd get if you took this money and invested in another rental property, some of those would be appreciation, some of those would be debt pay down, some of those would be tax benefits, and some of them would be cash flow. But this one is actually pure cash flow part of your return, because okay, that's for the return you're getting there from improved cash flow. So you can take a look at the simple interest ones. You can go out to 30 years. So, you know, if you bought it down to here with the 30-year simple interest, you're earning 30.3% return on your money. If you look at this as a compound interest rate return, and you look here, you can see, you know, if you held the property for 10 years, after you got your money back, you'd be earning a 12.88% return per year, compounding rate of return for a 10-year period. And you can see that in general, the returns tend to go down the longer you hold it for compounding, and they tend to go down as you buy down the interest rate a lot more. So there's sort of some sweet spots in here. You can see where there's some nice solid returns in the year. But that, you know, they're color-coded, where the red ones are the lower returns. The orange ones are kind of like in between, and the green ones are the ones here. So this is sort of the sweet spot for doing this. If you're going to hold the property for about 10 years, you'd get a nice return on your money by doing this, okay? So this shows you the simple interest returns and the compound interest returns. All the different interest rates are listed over here. I cut off the spreadsheet because I didn't want to make it really small text on the screen, but it'll show you the interest rate, and then you can look over at the one you're considering buying down to, and you'd see what the return is. You'd say, I would be getting a, whatever it is, 12.88% per year return compounding on my money. Is that a good return for me? Yes or no? You can decide whether or not you want to do it based on some of that. Okay, so here's an example. The rate of return after paid back the down payment, the buy down amount. Then various simple annual returns for 5 years, 30 years, and a 5 year increment. For example, if you hold the property for 15 years and you bought the rate down to 6%, that's the one that's highlighted, you have a 28% per year simple interest return on your buy down money. 28% seems pretty good to me, but you can decide what is fair for you based on current market conditions, what you're able to get elsewhere, what your risk tolerances are elsewhere, and what you decide is going to be reasonable. So you can get a really good return on your money by doing this. For the compounding annual, for the compound interest rates of return, various compound interest rates, years 5 through 30 and 5-year increments. For example, if you hold the property for 15 years and you bought down the rate to 6%, you'd earn 11.62% per year compound interest on your money. Also pretty good. More down. So sometimes putting more down will improve your interest rate. We talked about that from going from 20% to 25%. Also, we'll get rid of that PMI payment, the private mortgage term payment. Maybe you went from 15% down to 20% down, got rid of PMI completely. The spreadsheet does not account for either of those, okay? So we're going to go and compare how buying down the interest rate compares to, you know, putting more down where you're actually borrowing less and you're going to have a lower monthly payment. But what it doesn't take into account is, you know, sometimes going from 20% down to 25% down will improve your interest rate. And so the calculations will be a little bit more in favor of buying down, or I'm sorry, putting more down on the property. Or it doesn't take into account that your PMI is going to change on a property going from 5% to 10% or 15% to 20%. So those things are not included in these calculations. I just want to point that out as we go into the details here, because now I'm going to start comparing. Is it better for you to take the same amount of money that you were going to use to buy down the mortgage interest rate and to actually put more down to make a larger down payment, which then means you're borrowing less, which means your cash flow is going to improve. Now we're going to compare those two head to head. But it's a little bit unfair because we're not taking into account that sometimes it improves your interest rate if you go over a tier, and sometimes you get rid of PMI, okay? It does, however, look at how putting more down and borrowing less would improve cash flow and compares that to buying down your interest rate instead. That's what we're going to compare. And it's not really apples to apples, but it's close enough where I think you could see the benefits. All right, so comparing the returns in dollars when you're looking at these things. So how much in dollars improve? So if you put more down in down payment, appreciation, the tendency for property values to go up over a long period of time, although they can go down too, is typically unaffected. It doesn't matter if you buy the property for all cash or if you only put 5% down, the property is going to go up or down with the property goes up or down. It's, you know, if it goes up, you know, 3%, it means it's going to go up, you know, $12,000 on a $400,000 property. It doesn't matter if you put 5% down or 20% down or 50% down or 100% down, the property value is going up $12,000 regardless, okay? Or it's going down $5,000 or $12,000, right? It doesn't matter how much you put down. When you buy down the mortgage interest rate, the appreciation is also unaffected. It doesn't matter if you have a 7% interest rate or 6.5% interest rate or 6% interest rate. The property value goes up and down regardless of what your mortgage interest rate is and regardless of how much you put in terms of down payment. Now, in terms of like return on investment, those definitely change, but I'm just talking about pure dollar amount that you actually get in return, okay? So dollar amount in return, they're unaffected whether or not you put more down or you buy down the interest rate. However, cash flow improves the more you put down. You put more down, you borrow less, your cash flow gets better. Cash flow improves the more you buy down the mortgage interest rate. So the less your mortgage interest rate is, the less your monthly payment's going to be, the better your cash flow is going to be. So both of those improve the amount of dollars you're going to get in terms of return. Now, here's one that I'll cover the one that's easy first, and then I'll come back to the hard one. Cash flow from depreciation. The tax benefits you own, the tax benefits you get from owning a rental property are unaffected regardless of how much you put down. Whether you buy the property all cash or you buy the property, you put 5% down, it doesn't matter. You're going to get a certain amount of gross depreciation on the property regardless of which one you do. The amount of gross depreciation you get on a property is unaffected by when you buy down your mortgage interest rate. It doesn't matter the financing you have in your property, the tax benefits are going to be the same regardless. Now, the one that gets confusing for people and the one that's hard to understand is debt pay down. The amount you pay down on a loan actually decreases when you actually borrow less money. And the simplest way to look at it is if you were going to borrow $400,000 on a property, you have 30 years to pay off $400,000 when you borrow that. Well, let's say you only borrowed $300,000. Well, now you got to pay off $300,000 over that same time period. You're actually paying down, you're paying off less because you're borrowing less. Okay. So the amount of return you're getting actually goes down because you're borrowing less. Imagine you had a $400,000 loan versus a $50,000 loan. You can see that in order to pay off both those properties over 30 years, you need to pay off more of the $400,000 property every month than you would a $50,000 loan on a property every month. And so the amount you're getting in debt pay down, the more you put down, the lower the amount of return you're getting in dollars from that part of the return quadrant on that property. And by the way, it often improves if your interest rate got better from putting more down. So if you're borrowing 20% down, the amount you're getting from debt pay down changes. When you put 25% down, it actually goes down because you're borrowing less. Okay. But if you actually improve your interest rate going from 20 to 25% down, it either reduces how much less, makes it a little bit more, because improved interest rates, the lower your interest rate is, the more you pay down earlier in the loan. Weird thing, but trust me, the amount you paid out on a loan for the first payments, you know, the earlier payments, actually pay a little bit more in principal the lower your interest rate is. So if you had two loans that were identical, $400,000 loans, and one of them was at 6%, the other one was at 5.5, the 5.5 loan pays down a little bit more in principal for those early on payments. At the end, they both pay off $400,000. But because the interest rate is lower and the payments are going to be lower, then the amount that you pay off in principal actually is higher on the one that has a lower interest rate. So you have two conflicting things going on here with down payment. The return you're getting from down payment when you put more down the property typically goes down because you're borrowing less, but it typically goes up a little bit or less down, if you think about it that way, because your interest rate would improve if you put a lot more down. You kind of hit one of those tiers where your mortgage interest rate improved. However, when you buy down your mortgage interest rate, that means that your interest rate improves. And I told you, when you improve your interest rate, it means you pay down more of that loan in the earlier parts of it. So the interim debt pay down, the kind of short-term debt pay down, actually improves because of lower interest rate. So when you think about the returns and how they're affected, cash flow improves on both of them for different reasons, usually. But then your debt pay down also improves on the buying down interest rate ones, but it actually gets worse for the down payment one because you're borrowing less. Okay. And then the other two, appreciation and cash flow from depreciation, are actually unchanged. They're unaffected by that. All right. So the more down versus buying down the rate. So if you think about, if you took the dollar amount that it costs to buy down your interest rate to 6%, the same amount that it would cost you in order to buy down the mortgage interest rate, and instead you use that as an extra down payment instead, your cash flow would be, in this case, $1,729 per year better to buy down the mortgage interest rate. So what we do is we do the calculation for, you know, what if you borrowed less? What would the payment be on that? And then what if you instead borrowed the higher amount, but you actually bought down your interest rate and you did it that way? What is the difference in monthly payment? And this is what that chart is showing you. It's showing you the change in annual cash flow for buying down your interest rate minus putting more down. So in this case, you'd make $293 more per year, yearly number, annual, if you actually only bought it down to 6.5. If you bought it down to 6.375, it's $650 almost per year. And this way, 6.25 is almost $1,000 a year. 6.125 is almost $1,400 a year. 6% is about $1,700 a year. 5.875 is about $2,000 a year. So you can see, you know, if you got down to 5.75, it's about $200 a month, give or take, better if you bought down the interest rate than if you paid more and put more down on the property, which is why we're doing this module separately, because it's such a big deal to understand that this is one way you can improve cash flow on a property. Okay, it's not the only way, but it is a way. And if you're thinking, should I put more down or should I buy down interest rate? It's good to be able to do these calculations and to be able to see what the differences are and then make a decision about whether which one you want to do, because there's pros and cons to each. That's what I've been trying to point out. A more balanced view of, here's where this one's better, here's where this one's better. What are you trying to accomplish? You know, what is your goal? Where, you know, are you trying to do financial independence by acquiring fewer properties, making sure those properties cash flow better? Or are you doing like amplified returns on a bunch of properties, really high leverage properties where you're getting really good rocket booster returns, then you're going to sell them off or you're going to refi them or do whatever and kind of roll up? Well, maybe you don't want to buy down the interest rate in that case, okay? And so this shows you the difference between more down versus buying down your interest rate. All right, comparing to extra down payment. So here's the spreadsheet, and this section just shows you the comparison that we just went over, and it shows you what the annual improvements to cash flow are based on those, okay? So that gives you an idea of what those differences are. Not just cash flow. So the spreadsheet is not just calculating the improvement to cash flow, although many investors will emphasize this return, right? This is their primary focus. They're like, I want cash flow, I want cash flow, I want cash flow. And so the spreadsheet does show you the cash flow number, but realize that when you actually have a different interest rate, it pays down the loan at a different rate than if you had a higher interest rate. And it becomes even more profound the bigger the difference of the interest rates are. So if you bought down the interest rate by a lot, then the impact of actually how much equity you're building up as quickly as you are has a pretty big impact too. So the spreadsheet, Brian's spreadsheet does, it calculates changes in equity from different debt pay down schedules as well. So when you put more down, you borrow less and therefore less debt pay down. And when you buy down your mortgage interest rate, instead you borrow more. And therefore, number one, you have a slightly higher debt payment from a higher mortgage amount. And number two, you pay off more principal or with earlier payments because there's a lower mortgage interest rate. So what I explained before is just summarized on this slide, showing you that the amount of equity you're getting from debt pay down is different between the two. And so this also takes that into account. This shows you the overall difference, including both the cash flow and the debt pay down part of your return. So how much equity you have and how much extra cash flow you have and the difference. And so it shows you for all the different interest rates, which are over to the left, can't see. And then it shows you what year it is. And so you can see that some of these numbers get very, very large, where it's more beneficial for you to have paid down the mortgage interest rate than it is to do this. If you're only holding the property for a few years in these areas where it's all negative, that means it's better for you to have just bought down the interest rate. I'm sorry, put more down. Those are the ones. Ones where it's negative, you would have been better off putting more down on the property. All the first three are ones where you're getting a credit. You can ignore these first three lines, okay? But after this, these are all the ones where you're starting to buy down the interest rate and by how much. And so for these first few years of this, it's actually better for you to put more down payment. And then eventually you pay off the amount that you actually had in your interest rate and that you get the money back. Because the one you get with equity, when you put more down, it stays in equity. The other one actually disappears because it's an expense. So it takes you a while to pay it back. But then as soon as you pay it back, you can see the returns are happening and they grow very rapidly, where it becomes much better for you to have bought down the interest rate depending on how long you hold it. So you almost need to know going in how long you plan on holding this property. And things do change. You're going to make mistakes with this. You're going to think to yourself, I'm going to hold this property forever. Then once you hold it for 3 years, you're like, I really don't like the characteristics of this property. First chance I get to sell it, I'm going to sell it, right? And so you may decide, you may think you're going to buy a property and hold it forever, but then you decide to do something different with it. Or you think of a property, hey, look, I'm going to quick turn this one. I'm only going to hold it for 2 years until I get past my, owner-occupant thing. I'm going to do some type of thing with taxes and stuff like that. And then I'm going to sell it off. And you decide, this makes a great rental. I'm never selling this thing. So you could make mistakes both ways. Just realize you should be thinking this far ahead and trying to plan for it and seeing the difference in money here. Okay? Do the math, but don't buy down the interest rate if, number one, you're planning to sell the property quickly. If you know you're going to sell it really quickly, why would you spend money, have that money like go away because it's an expense, and then you don't give it enough time in order to get that money back plus a return on that money? So if you're going to sell the property quickly, do the math to see for yourself, but probably you're not going to be buying down the mortgage interest rate if you're planning to sell a property pretty quickly. If you're planning to pay off the property aggressively, you may also not want to do that. You know, hey, look, my plan is to take all the extra cash flow I have from all my properties coming in and to dump it into one property, pay that thing off first. Then I'm going to take all the cash flow from all my properties, including the one I have free and clear, and I'm going to use it to pay off this next property. And maybe that's either the highest interest rate one or the lowest balance, depending on which strategy you believe is better for you. There are pros and cons of each. Math suggests the higher interest rate one, but I digress. But basically, if you're doing all of this stuff and you're decided to take all the money and do that, and you know you're planning to very aggressively pay off a property, maybe don't buy down the interest rate on that property. You accept the slightly worse cash flow, knowing that you're only going to have that property for 5 years, 10 years, however long it takes you in order to very aggressively pay it off. So maybe you don't buy down the interest rate on that one. Or if you know you're planning to refinance a property, maybe you decide not to buy down the mortgage interest rates on that. So if rates happen to drop and you know that you're going to refi into a lower rate, well, any money you spent to buy down the interest rate previously is lost. It's a sunk cost. You've already paid it. You're not getting it back. Any money you made on it during that time, you might have gotten some or all of your money back and maybe even a little return if you owned it long enough. But if you didn't get your return back and you decide to refinance, whatever you put in before is gone. So if rates drop, you may not want to buy down your rates. If you're planning a refi and if the rates drop. If you're planning on refi because you're going to pull cash out and re-leverage up, maybe your strategy is, look, every time I get $50,000 in equity in the property that I can actually pull out, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and do a refinance on that property. I'm going to pull out the $50,000. I'm going to use 50 from this property, 50 from this property, 50 from this property, and I'm going to go buy another property and re-leverage up. You're really increasing your risk in all the different measures of risk that we do. But if that's your very aggressive strategy in order to do something, then maybe you don't spend money and improve cash flow on these properties because you're not going to plan on having those loans long enough to do it. Or if you plan on doing like a refinance of a property to extend the term, you paid down the loan for 10 years. You're like, hey, look, I'd like to be able to improve cash flow. Maybe you're heading into retirement, or if you do these refinances, you'll actually trigger yourself to be high enough in cash flow that you'll be able to be financially independent. And you decide, I'm going to do these rate and term refinances on these four properties or 10 properties that you have. You decide to go refinance those in order to extend the term back out to 30 years. You're not changing how much you owe. And you don't even have to change the interest rate. You just decide, hey, look, I owe 20 years left on it. The monthly payment was this. I'm going to take the same amount that I owe at the same interest rate, even if they haven't changed. And you're going to re-extend it out to 30 years. That reduces your monthly payment on all those properties, which may give you enough extra cash flow to be financially independent. And that's your strategy. Well, if you're going to do that, and you had all these properties that you bought down these mortgages on, that doesn't help you, right? You wasted that money, or you only got the return on the money for as long as you held it, which may be enough, right? You may actually say, look, going back and looking at the period of time, if I do this for 10 years, it's still worth it for me to do this. I still get a really good return. I get all my money back from the buy down, and I got extra cash flow for these extra 6 years. And that may be worthwhile. But you have to look at the math and decide, are you going to do that? And when do you think that's going to happen, and plan for it? This is sort of like stepping back from your portfolio and doing more like portfolio optimization or portfolio planning. Okay. So that's what we're talking about here when we do that. So do the math, but don't buy down if any of these things are true, or make a decision as to whether or not you're going to do them. Okay. Now, if you got this extra money, should you buy down your rate, or should you prepay PMI? Because one of the options for PMI is, instead of paying monthly, in some properties, so conventional financing especially, you could choose to say, I'm going to give you a one-time lump sum upfront PMI payment instead of paying monthly. So you could either put $5,000 toward buying down your interest rate, or you might say, I'm going to pay $5,000 in order to prepay my PMI, and now I don't have PMI anymore, and I get improved cash flow. So in some cases, especially for like nomads and house hackers who are buying properties and moving in and putting like 5% down when they buy their properties, or 3.5% down when they buy their properties, or 0% down if you're doing USDA or VA, although those don't technically, I guess USDA does, but VA doesn't have PMI, it has a funding fee instead. But basically, the idea is if you're doing this, you may want to be asking whether you should buy down your rate or take that same money and prepay your PMI in one lump sum payment instead of paying it monthly. Now, I could do an entire class on how to compare these, but the short version is, for that calculation, you should actually use the world's greatest deal analysis spreadsheet, where you put in the costs in order to buy down the interest rate and then what the new interest rate is. And then you do the costs in order to buy down or prepay your PMI and what PMI goes to zero looks like, and then compare the returns you're getting overall on that to see if you prefer the characteristics of the one where you buy down the interest rate or the ones where you actually prepay PMI, and you're looking at the returns you're earning on that kind of like top quadrant, or even on the overrides tab to kind of see how it works out for you. And then you're going to optimize for whatever your preference is. That's the way you do that calculation, the short version. Okay. So that's really what I wanted to cover today in buying down the interest rate. I will provide you a link to download the spreadsheet so you can do this yourself. But it is definitely a way. I mean, you could see some of the significant improvements to cash flow you can have by choosing to put a little bit of money into buying down the interest rate and how that'll all play out. So that's all I got for you. I've been James Orr. Hope you enjoyed this module on buying down your mortgage interest rate. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
With home prices up, mortgage interest rates up, and rents up, but not quite enough to counteract the higher prices and interest rates. Cash flow on rental properties in Salt Lake City is harder than ever. Book a call with the Real Estate Financial Planner to apply our proprietary 88 strategies to improve cash flow on your rentals. See the show notes for a link to schedule your call and improve your cash flow today.
If you're a real estate agent, lender, or professional in Salt Lake City that wants to help our real estate investor listeners, consider reaching out to learn about collaboration opportunities with this podcast. We'd love to add more value to our listeners by having you assist our investors buy, sell, and finance their real estate investments. See the show notes to schedule a call to discuss collaboration opportunities.